Recorded Books is pleased to present the Modern Scholar Series, where great professors teach you. My name is George Guidel, and I'll be your host. Today we begin a course entitled Crime Scene Forensics, Part 1. Your professor will be Dr. Robert C. Shaler. Dr. Shaler received his doctoral degree from Pennsylvania State University and over his career has held academic appointments at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, the University of Pittsburgh School of Pharmacy, the City University of New York, New York University School of Medicine, and most recently at Pennsylvania State University. Professor Shaler has worked for the scientific staff of the Pittsburgh and Allegheny County Crime Laboratory in 1970, the Aerospace Corporation, the New York City Medical Examiner's Office as the head of its serology laboratory, and the Life Codes Corporation, the nation's first forensic DNA typing laboratory, where he introduced DNA fingerprinting to the nation's legal and law enforcement communities through a series of nationwide informational lectures. At the New York City Medical Examiner's Office, he created a modern Department of Forensic Biology, helped to design its current 300,000 square feet headquarters, and established the city's first crime scene reconstruction team. In the wake of the terrorists' attacks on the World Trade Center, Shaler assumed responsibility for the DNA identification effort. In 2003, he was awarded an honorary doctoral degree from the State University of New York at Stony Brook for his work for the citizens of New York and for his effort to identify the missing at the World Trade Center site. In 2005, he published the book Who They Were, Inside the World Trade Center DNA Story, the unprecedented effort to identify the missing, that told the story of the medical examiner's staff and scientists working behind the scenes of the DNA ID effort. Professor Shaler's crime scene investigation course has attracted national attention, being featured on the Today Show, Hollywood Heat, and on the Discovery Channel. He is also the author of over 40 publications and chapters in 4 books. For more information on this course, please visit its webpage at www.modernscholar.com, where you'll have access to links to related sites and a seminar room to share your thoughts with other students. And now, we begin Crime Scene Forensics, Part 1, Lecture 1, Introduction to Crime Scene Investigation.
Over the last 15 years or so, the American public has become enamored with crime scene investigation. I can't say that this is something which has been just relegated to the last 15 years. We can remember Dragnet, NYPD Blue, and a number of other cop programs have involved some sort of crime scene investigation. But recently, this has really attracted the attention of people because I think of programs like CSI, Crime Scene Investigation. Crime scene investigation is probably one of the most important, if not the most important, part of an investigation. As Attorney General Janet Reno stated in her 1995 Crime Scene Investigation Guide to Law Enforcement, and I quote, "Actions taken at the outset of an investigation at a crime scene can play a pivotal role in the resolution of a case. Careful, thorough investigation is the key to ensure that potential physical evidence is not tainted or destroyed or potential witnesses overlooked. While many agencies have programs in crime scene processing, the level of training and resources available varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, as does the opportunity to practice actual investigation," unquote. As we work through our lectures, we need to understand that the crime scene investigation is actually two heads. One, it's a scientific endeavor, and second, it's an investigative endeavor. And the success of any crime scene investigation requires creative thinking, logic, the correct application of science, all encompassed and embodied within the scientific method. Scene investigations are an intellectual exercise. And to disagree, which is what a number of people do, is ignorance, inexperience, or just plain stupidity. As the legendary golf professional Bobby Jones is credited with saying, and I quote, "Competitive golf is played mainly on a 5.5-inch course. That is, the space between your ears," unquote. And so it is with crime scene investigation. In fact, a competent crime scene investigation is as cerebral an exercise as any scientific endeavor in forensic science. You must understand that scene investigations are comprehensive, tedious, and difficult, and that they dovetail with experience. Before we get into the heart and depth of what crime scene investigation is all about, I think we need to talk about some terminology. Police officers and scientists who investigate crime scenes are called scene investigators, forensic investigators, or technicians, depending upon the jurisdiction in which they work. For the discussions in this series, the term crime scene technician will not be employed, and it's not appropriate because, in my opinion, it's demeaning to the scientists and to the specialized investigator professionals who do this kind of work. I'm going to use the terms scene scientist and or scene investigator. I believe they're more appropriate, and that's depending upon the various roles that they play. For example, if a person is conducting the investigation is a police officer or a detective, a non-scientist, this person is a scene investigator. If the person is a scientist who is working the scene, this person is a scene scientist and may or may not be a scene investigator. For these lectures, then, these individuals who investigate crime scenes are going to be considered either investigators or as scene scientist investigators. The problem occurs with the perception that professionals in law enforcement have towards scene investigators. Lawyers, law enforcement officials, politicians, and even forensic scientists do not understand the delicate balance of science and investigative activity that's necessary in order to conduct a competent crime scene investigation. They incorrectly consider crime scene investigation as a simple, non-scientific process that requires minimal expertise that anyone can be trained to do. It almost seems as if we could take monkeys out of a cage and run them through a training course and then shove them into a crime scene and allow them to do the things that crime scene investigators do today. In fact, that's crap. The composition of crime scene units by police agencies illustrates their inherent belief that crime scene investigation is simple, a matter of spreading dusting powder around, shining an ALS or laser to find fingerprints or biological fluids and fibers, collecting the evidence, packaging it, and delivering it to an appropriate location, such as a crime laboratory. Certainly, these are all important aspects of the scene investigation, but this too widely held belief is not correct. In fact, such an investigative paradigm is wrong. Often those who have never been to a crime scene or participated in a crime scene investigation look at scene work as simple, maybe even mindless. Unfortunately, these are forensic professionals, scientists who work in laboratories, judges who preside over court proceedings, prosecution attorneys, defense attorneys, and although these are people who practice in the forensic arena, they are truly ignorant of the most important activity occurring at the beginning stages of any forensic investigations. Like what I said before, and what Bobby Jones said so many years ago, competitive golf, and I quote, competitive golf is played mainly on a 5.5-inch course, the space between your ears. And so it is with crime scene investigation. So let's take a look a little further and talk about why you should investigate the crime scene. I guess if I were to ask somebody, why do you investigate a crime scene? A reasonable, perhaps flippant response might be to find evidence. Well, that's what happens, of course. But is that the sole reason for investigating a crime scene or investigating a crime? For this series, the question is certainly appropriate, and finding evidence is certainly one of the important byproducts of the scene investigation. The overriding reason for investigating the scene is to solve the crime. And while the most important reason for investigating the crime scene is to solve a particular crime, we also have to understand that investigating a particular crime scene can link to other crimes and help solve other crimes. So there are actually about 5 reasons for investigating the crime scene, in addition to the finding and the packaging and preserving of evidence, which are the byproduct of the process. First, we can provide investigative leads for detectives. We can develop specific information in the form of evidence or investigative logic to help with a successful prosecution down the road. We can provide exculpatory evidence of innocence. That means we might find something there that would prove that the person who's been arrested is not guilty. And we can locate appropriately significant information to allow a successful and hopefully accurate reconstruction of the events that happened during the commission of that crime. And finally, we can identify links to other crimes. I mentioned this earlier, but it's important to mention because these investigations are going to turn up fingerprints or footprints or DNA, which would have been left at other crime scenes. And by linking them together, then we can solve more than just one crime. We can begin to link or group together crimes that were perpetrated by the same individual or individuals, and therefore narrow the investigative activity, and therefore be more efficient in the use of your resources. Historically, bringing science to the scene, that is, the scene investigative process, hasn't been easy. And I suppose there's a reason for that, although it's not a very good one. But the concept is continually blocked by an entrenched law enforcement establishment, almost as though bringing science in is an invasion of their turf. This has been a point of controversy for decades. In an article titled Science versus Practical Common Sense in Crime Detection in 1931, Captain Duncan Mathewson, the chief of detectives of the San Francisco Police Department, said, and I quote, "Much has been said and published about the educated college policeman and detective, and it is all bunk. Give me the practical detective with actual experience in handling criminals and criminal cases, and with 10 such men, I will do more work than any college professor or so-called expert can do with 100 of his trained nuts. Most of those that I have seen couldn't put a harness on a mule, let alone catch a crook." As he continued, "There's an overabundance of self-styled scientific detectives and crime experts in this country. They would have a gullible public believe they are so scientific that the crooks would respond to engraved invitations to visit police headquarters and just surrender. Just how long the public will stand for this rot is a question." Dunlap concluded, "In truth, there is no real cause for a misunderstanding between the exponents of modern science and those who emphasize the need of practical common sense methods of crime detection. Science should simply confine its efforts to the solution of all problems that call for special scientific treatment, and never undertake to steal the show, so to speak, by underrating the importance of practical common sense methods in the general investigation of nearly all cases. And the old-time successful crime investigator should welcome every possible assistance of proven value that science has to offer. Science is not, by the wildest stretch of the imagination, a substitute for practical methods, as the public has often been led to believe. Instead, it is just the most valuable acquisition and potent aid, which should go hand in hand with plain, practical common sense and good judgment in a combined effort to cope with the difficult situation that confronts law enforcement agencies in every section of the land." Well, that's an interesting comment. On the one hand, he's saying that science doesn't belong there. On the other hand, he's telling us that maybe we can work together. And that's really a good thing. And that was said back in the early 1930s, 1931. The police versus science at crime scene controversy continues even today. In an attack on two forensic scientists' book written by Jerry Chisholm and Brent Turvey called Crime Reconstruction, Ross Gardner, who's a highly respected crime scene investigator and bloodstain spatter pattern analyst, wrote, and I quote, "Throughout this text, the authors incorporate a class-based ad hominem attack that is directed against anyone associated with law enforcement. Some of these attacks are indirect and veiled as a discussion of objectivity, but others are clear statements that show the authors come with their own very distinct personal bias." Chisholm and Turvey responded, and they're very, very clear in what they believe. And I quote, "The harsh reality is that crime scene processing and documentation efforts are often abysmal, if not completely absent. Crime scenes throughout the United States are commonly processed by police employed technicians or sworn personnel with little or no formal education, to say nothing of training in the forensic sciences and crime scene processing techniques. The in-service training available to law enforcement typically exists in the form of half-day seminars or short courses taught by non-scientists who, on their own, in no way impart the discipline and expertise necessary to process crime scenes adequately for the purposes of Reconstruction, unquote. So we have this controversy between police investigators and scientists, and the controversy really should not exist. But as we move forward, I think it's important that we have an understanding of what the different terminology is. And so there are certain terms that we need to talk about specifically. One is crime scene. Another is a term called forensics. Another is forensic science. And another is criminalistics. And then finally, I think we need to also talk about what evidence is and what evidence means. We have to understand these terms before we can really move forward with what the crime scene investigation is all about. So let's first concentrate on the term crime scene. What exactly is a crime scene? I think we all have a pretty good idea what a crime scene is. We know that they exist, and we know intuitively what they are. But in my research, I haven't found anyone who's really taken the time to define what the crime scene is. So for the purposes of our discussions, I think it's important to at least define the scene, if for no other reason than to put it into perspective, sort of as a place to start, a placeholder, if you will. And if we proceed without defining it, I think that would be inappropriate. So let's take a first shot at what the definition of a crime scene might be. And we can define the crime scene, perhaps, as the place where the participants meet in time and space. And for our purposes, the participants are the scene, the perpetrator, and the victim. So these three ingredients have to be together in order to define a crime scene. Well, is that really true? Maybe not. Let's consider a bioterrorism event, such as the anthrax mailings in 2001 that took place almost directly after, about a month after, the World Trade Center attacks in New York. In the anthrax mailings, someone mailed the lethal bacillus anthracis to several victims. So if we look at what happened there, maybe that definition, where participants meet in time and space, isn't really accurate, because we have to look at the anthrax mailings and ask exactly what the crime scene was. Was it the postal boxes where the envelopes were mailed? Was it the place where they were delivered, like in New York or in Florida or in Washington, D.C.? Or was it the place where the anthrax was prepared? Maybe the answer is all four. And if we think about this kind of a crime scene or crime scenes and an explosion such as someone wearing a suicide vest where they blow themselves up, or maybe the attack on the USS Cole, or even the release of sarin gas in Japan. I think when we look at these kinds of events, we need to reconsider what the definition of a crime scene should be. And so let's look at it this way. The crime scene is the place where the participants meet in time and space, or where the instrument of the crime, whether it be biological, explosive, or whatever, is prepared and delivered. So that gives us a working definition for the purposes of our lectures of what the crime scene is. Next, I think we have to consider what forensic science is. Most people believe forensic scientists, when you ask them how to define forensic science, they might reply that it's the application of the techniques of science to legal matters, both criminal and civil. Very simple, basically the application of science to whatever's going on, specifically to the analysis of evidence. But sometimes, especially in recent years, and with the advent of CSI, we've come up with another term, and the term is forensics. If we look at the origin of the term forensics, at least in our modern lexicon, it was really coined from modern adaptation inspired by television. And because of that, the public has come to equate forensics with forensic science. And so there's sort of a loose connection there that really doesn't belong. And I think it's important that we consider that and maybe split these two apart a little bit. We clearly understand that those people who practice forensics in the TV sense are not scientists, and therefore, by definition, cannot be forensic scientists. Mostly, these are police investigators who attempt to apply forensic science to locate and enhance evidence at a crime scene as part of the scene investigation. If we start to take a look at this a little more closely, and because of the widespread application of the term forensics, it seems like its meaning has sort of morphed over the last few years and now has more of an umbrella-like connotation. So let's, for argument's sake, define forensics as an umbrella term applied to investigative professionals who use standard techniques to answer questions relating to evidence and crimes. That's one way to look at the term forensics. And if we look at forensics in terms of the largest professional forensic group in the United States, the American Academy of Forensic Sciences, we consider the American Academy of Forensic Sciences as being comprised of non-scientific disciplines and scientific disciplines. Non-scientific disciplines might include psychology, jurisprudence, dentistry, and so on. Scientific disciplines might include toxicology, anthropology, entomology, chemistry, and biology. Also under this forensics umbrella are scene investigations and people who practice scene investigations. And then there's the term that bridges the space between the scientific disciplines and scene investigators, and this is a group of scientists known as criminalists, and they practice what we call criminalistics. That brings us to another definition. Let's talk a little bit about what criminalistics is. In essence, it is the cornerstone of forensic science. And we're going to learn as we move further on that criminalistics is also part of the creed of the crime scene investigator. As we said, the scene is where a crime takes place. And it's the only place, in our really limited definition, where the participants coincide in time and space. We have to consider that perhaps the loudest participant in the crime is the crime scene, because the crime scene offers to the human participants a physical plant for their activity. And when we think about that, then we think about the exchange of evidence among these participants. And we have to go back and think about the French lawyer and scientist Edmond Locard, who is credited, although maybe it's a bit overstated and certainly overused, every touch leaves a trace. Simply, this means that an exchange of material has to be something physical, can be large, can be small, can be microscopic or macroscopic, takes place among the participants of this crime. This is the premise of the forensic scientist and the crime scene investigator. These professionals believe that if this evidence can be located and analyzed, a physical connection among the participants, that is, the scene, the assailants, and the victims, can be identified. And then hopefully this leads to a successful prosecution or the exoneration of someone who is guilty. The statement, every touch leaves a trace, although probably never said explicitly by Locard, has become known as the Locard exchange principle. This idea is the creed of criminalist, forensic scientists, and crime scene investigators. It is the essential ingredient of forensic science, and experience in crime scene investigations tells us that the Locard exchange principle is alive and well and operating at all crime scenes. So, we've discussed what a crime scene is, we've discussed what forensic science is, and we've discussed what forensics is, and we've sort of hinted around what criminalistics is. There are several texts on the market that discuss criminalistics. Some actually use the title in their work, some just talk about it being forensic science or crime scene investigations. But the principles of criminalistics, and I haven't defined it for you yet, but the principles of criminalistics are an integral and essential aspect of a competent crime scene investigation. The term is often used interchangeably with forensic science. So what's the difference? Maybe there's no difference. Let's take a look at it. The California Association definition of criminalistics implies a court relationship, suggests that criminalistic analyses may be significant in legal cases. By using the term may, they imply that a courtroom appearance is not an absolute, not necessarily an absolute. A well-known forensic scientist, Dr. Peter DeForest, agrees. He agrees that the court reference is not entirely appropriate. He agrees that the reason criminalists become involved in an investigation is to examine physical evidence, which may or may not have legal implications. So if criminalistics is not exactly forensic science and vice versa, what is it? Two California forensic scientists, Keith Inman and Nora Rudin, expressed their opinions like this, and I quote, "This practical definition of criminalistics, that is, the person who analyzes evidence in a crime laboratory may be referred to as an analyst, a forensic scientist, or a criminalist, has taken on a life of its own, expanding to encompass a more general philosophy and cognitive framework." This idea that Inman and Rudin have sort of approaches the essence of what criminalistics is, and that is not just simply a profession made up of scientists who employ the principles of science and the scientific method, nor is it simply the science of comparison, as others have suggested. In fact, it is as much a science as it is a philosophy. It's a holistic approach or an analytical strategy with respect to the analysis of evidence in a case and within the framework of that case. It involves piecing together fragments of scientific fact to arrive at testable hypotheses. It's a blend of the holistic approach and science, and it's impossible to investigate a scene properly or evaluate an analytical laboratory strategy or to reconstruct the events of the crime without blending the holistic approach and science. This is true because criminalistics considers all of the information in a case and not just simply the analysis of a single piece of evidence. Thus, it is an amalgam of the principles of science, logic, critical thinking, and experience. And maybe we can piece together a working definition of criminalistics, and it might go something like this. Criminalistics is a scientific profession whose members embrace a holistic philosophy that encompasses the principles of science, the scientific method, and logic with respect to the analysis of evidence and its relationship to a set of alleged facts. So if we take a look at who a criminalist is, this is somebody who has a science education, is skilled in the art of logic and critical analysis, uses a holistic approach to the analysis of evidence, and finally analyzes evidence in a laboratory and compares this, all of the results of these analyses, with a set of alleged facts, and then comes up with interpretations or conclusions. Are all forensic scientists criminalists? Well, let's take a look. Let's take a look at the forensic DNA biologist. This is a person who analyzes DNA on evidence submitted to the laboratory, and this is a person who will testify in court to the innocence or guilt or perhaps of the relationship of DNA to the case at hand. So we have a forensic DNA biologist. The forensic DNA biologist is someone who can accept a cutout from another scientist or scene investigator who first screened the evidence for the presence of, well, could be semen, let's say, and then performs a DNA analysis. This person is not a criminalist. This person is a forensic scientist. And although this person is a scientist who conducts scientific tests on samples received into the laboratory, even though the sample is considered evidence, this person is not unlike a medical technologist who's given a blood sample to determine cholesterol levels in a clinical laboratory. So, for the forensic DNA biologist, there may be a little or no thought with respect to the actual factual information in the case. Their job is to get DNA out of the evidence, run the DNA test, and make a comparison with someone else's DNA. But the scientist who screened the evidence for the presence of the biological evidence, in fact, may have been practicing criminalistics. Because during the examination of that evidence, that person would have to have considered the origin of the evidence, its relationship to the case history, and then made an evaluation of the stain's location and pattern, and finally made a determination of whether DNA analysis was even appropriate. In other words, the location of the biological evidence and its physical appearance probably dictated a particular analytical path, and if it had been found in a different location and appeared differently, maybe that stain never would have gone to DNA analysis. The DNA profile determined by the forensic DNA biologist may be crucial for obtaining a successful prosecution. That's the end product of the DNA analysis, but that is not necessarily the practice of criminalistics. So we've looked at the forensic DNA analyst, and we've looked at this person, this scientist, if you will, with respect to whether or not they are criminalists. And we have identified that if that DNA analyst is simply accepting a cutout from a pair of panties or from a pair of jeans or from a shirt and asked to do DNA analysis on it, that person is not practicing criminalistics. But that person is a forensic scientist. The person works in a forensic laboratory, does forensic DNA analysis, and so we look at that person as a forensic scientist. What about the drug analyst, the person who works in a drug laboratory? And this, we're looking at this from the perspective of street drugs, the analysis of marijuana, heroin, cocaine, and things like that. Is that person a criminalist? Probably not. And the reason for that is that this is someone who receives a drug seizure into the laboratory, and depending upon what is asked to do, maybe they receive 1,000 packets of some white powder. And their job then is to find out what's in the white powder. They're not really concerned necessarily about the details of the arrest. All they're concerned with is seeing whether or not there's something there that's in violation of the drug statutes. So this person, these drug analysts who are analyzing street drugs, are probably not going to be considered criminalists, and in fact, they are forensic scientists. What about the medical examiner? Medical examiner's job is to ascertain the cause, mechanism, and manner of death. In other words, the circumstances of the death. The fact that someone died from a gunshot doesn't necessarily make it a homicide. It could be an accident. But the medical examiner is responsible for determining whether, in fact, it was an accident or whether it was a homicide. So in that respect, the medical examiner needs to be cognizant of the facts of the case. Medical examiner cannot practice forensic medicine without knowing the facts of the case, what doctors have said, what investigators have found. In this process, the medical examiner is practicing a brand of criminalistics because they need to know all of the facts. They need to do the investigation of the cause, mechanism, and manner of death from a holistic perspective. So in fact, they probably would not consider themselves criminalists by any stretch of the imagination because they're pathologists, and that's how they look at themselves as a forensic pathologist. But in fact, they are probably practicing criminalistics. So we have talked about forensics and that forensics is an umbrella term that encompasses forensic science, encompasses criminalistics, and as a general term, we have forensics units in police departments that are doing crime scene investigations, and they are applying science at the scene. And although they are applying science at the scene, they are not necessarily forensic scientists. Some are, most are not. So we've looked at the definition of what a crime scene is, and we've looked at it in terms of the kinds of crime scenes that you normally see on television. Those would be the ones where the participants meet in time and space, because we're usually talking about homicides or sexual assaults or something like that. And we've modified that definition to encompass the more common scenes that occur throughout the world that have become more prevalent lately, those involving terrorism events. And we have to define crime scenes to encompass that broader definition as well, knowing full well that most of the scenes that we have locally are not that kind of a scene. So the next time, we're going to be talking about evidence. And I remember when we first started talking about the different definitions we needed, I said that one of the last things we're going to be considering is what evidence is. And we need to look at evidence because it's important to understand, not only from a defining perspective, but also from the perspective of the crime scene investigation, and we need to talk about what the origin of evidence is, and we're going to be considering that as we move further on throughout these lectures. So, as we move on to the next lecture, we're going to be covering a couple of different issues. One, we're going to be talking about evidence and what evidence is. We're going to be also talk about what the crime scene, the common crime scene paradigm is today. In other words, what is the investigative paradigm used to investigate crime scenes throughout the United States today? And what should it be? And how should it change as we increasingly use science and technology to investigate crime scenes?
This ends Lecture 1.